The following paid program is furnished by Dr. Steve Pettirudi. It's for basic entertainment and informational purposes only and is solely responsible for its content. It does not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, its management, or its staff. News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi. Join Dr. Pettirudi as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pettirudi.
Good morning, everybody. I am Dr. Steve Pettirudi. This is Intellectual Medicine, and I am applying a little bit solo today. Shannon is home studying. She is on her way to becoming a nurse practitioner and has some colossal exams on the horizon. So as I speak, her face is in the book, but I've got Nick with me. Good morning, Nick.
Morning. How are you, doctor?
I feel great today. You know, I feel great. You know, the Nobels were announced and Bob Dylan won for literature. And it looks like I'll be here because I don't have to go to Sweden and pick up my Nobel in medicine. So I'm going to be right here with you.
Well, that's good, that's but good. It's also bad at the same time.
It's a great thing. That's okay.
You know, I think a week off the show for the Nobel would be a good
okay?
trade-off, right?
All right?
That'd be great for business.
All right. Well, listen, guys, it's great to be with you this morning. Steve, we'll get to you in 1 second. But first, I wanted to introduce the concept again. I should say reiterate. What is intellectual medicine? After all, isn't all medicine intellectual? Not really, folks. Think about how care is delivered. There is a standard of care. So there's standardized medicine. And that requires intelligence, but not really intellect. You see, when something is standardized, it becomes a protocol, a pathway. It becomes a simple matter of recollecting the pathway, knowing to whom it applies, and then executing it. Now, standardized care is not bad. It collates lots of information, and it helps masses of people that have a common condition. So there are standards of care for blood pressure, for diabetes, things of that nature. However, when it comes to the more challenging aspects of the human condition, there is no standard. Thus, there is a requirement to apply our intellect to process new information. If it's in a standard, by definition, it's old information. It's data that's been collected and evaluated, not necessarily proven superior to others, but generally accepted as worthy. Well, how about new information? How about looking at the aging process itself as worthy of addressing? And one of the primary things that aging exposes us to is an increased risk of cancer. Now, we've been turning our focus a bit to cancer, and at Intellectual Medicine, we are advocating the anti-cancer lifestyle, which means primary prevention. What things matter the most to not catch cancer? What factors go into acquiring it? And what can we do above and beyond or in addition to or instead of burning, cutting, and conventional care for cancer? Which, by the way, we are not opposed to at Intellectual Medicine. To be opposed to anything of that nature would be, well, not intellectual. However, we need to open our minds and our thoughts to the possible range of things. So we're going to be talking about that today, but I do want to take the call from Steve. Steve, thanks for waiting. You're on Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pettirudi.
Good morning, doctor. How are you today?
I feel great, Steve. Thanks.
Good. I had a great show, by the way.
Thank you.
I have two questions. May I ask two questions?
You sure can.
The first one would be, many people like me that are listening have doctors and have had their doctors for many years, but should they consider switching to intellectual medicine? And the second question would be, the end of your show last week, you spoke about what would someone do after they've recovered from cancer that point forward.
Right. Yeah. Two wonderful questions. And we will be talking, Steve, about the second question at some length today and also in the weeks to come. But to the first question, you know, if you've got a valuable relationship with a longstanding doctor, by all means, that is a precious commodity. And I'm not advocating for people to shift from their primary care, especially, you know, you can't replace history. And if you've got a doc that has been with you through thick and thin, servicing your needs, and here's the key element, Steve, listening and honoring your intellect. Those kind of doctors, even if they are not so labeled, are practicing a form of intellectual medicine. I will say it's really hard to do nowadays because the way doctors are burdened by bureaucratic impositions. You know, the average doctor spends 1 hour seeing patients and 2 hours futzing with a computer afterwards. They are robbed of their freedom and their time. And I don't know if you've noticed this in your experience, but many people report to me, you know, Dr. Pederuti, the doctor spends more time banging on the computer than listening to me. That's not what we want to do. So I can function, and intellectual medicine is a building movement. We are looking forward to bringing other doctors into this style of care. But, Steve, I could also be used in a consulting manner. So it's not an either-or dynamic when it comes to, hey, you know, I've got these concerns. I've heard Dr. Pederuti on the air, and I wonder what opinion he might have. We can function in a consultative manner. So that's the first question. The second one, there's a colossal void in secondary prevention for cancer. In fact, it doesn't exist. And I was talking about this at the end of my show, and it's a long topic. We'll continue to weave. If you've ever had cancer of any type, you are at a lifetime increased risk of acquiring either a relapse of that cancer or a new secondary malignancy. And that's because the conditions that led you to get cancer in the first place are likely still in play. And the treatment often imposed upon people, I should say, given to people for cancer, weakens them, and it weakens their immune system, and they become more likely to catch a second cancer. Steve, are you a cancer recoverer?
No, okay. No, actually, doctor, it's not me, and actually my daughter, but she had no chemotherapy. It was all removed surgically.
Right. So let me speak to that. When you have a microscopic disease, that is, cancer at its core is a cellular phenomenon. One cancer cell becomes two, becomes four, becomes eight. That's what we call doubling time. When you try to resolve a microscopic disease with a knife, odds are you might miss something. Now, I don't want to sow paranoia, and I'm pleased for your daughter's recovery, and the fact that she did not need chemotherapeutic agents is a wonderful asset. However, when it comes to cancer, we know there are certain factors that play into it. There are things that increase the risk of acquiring cancer. One of those are toxic exposures. Heavy metals are widely neglected but are pervasive. We're all familiar with the movie in Silkwood where they became exposed to a factory and identified that as a source of cancer. Well, look at the smokestacks. They're spewing out lead as they burn fossil fuel. We breathe that in. That's carcinogen. Look at makeup and items that have cadmium in it. Cadmium is a known carcinogen, and yet it's pervasive. So you can't avoid all these things, but you can do things to help detoxify. That's one element. Another, 13 different kinds of cancers have been associated to excess adiposity. And if you've listened to me, you know that we have invented a cure, a treatment for adiposity that works. I opened the show talking about standard of care. There is no standard of care for treating obesity. It's the number one medical disorder in our society today, and it is neglected and it is denigrated. So even if you're not morbidly obese, but you have excess adiposity, cancer risk goes up. We know that cancer cells love sugar. So they are sucking down sugar at 200 times the rate of normal cells. And then finally, Steve, we believe the use of high-dose IV vitamin C has a niche to play, an important role to play in wiping out these baby cancer cells before they can get a hold of you. Intravenous vitamin C, and I'll be talking about this later in the show as well, is toxic to many forms of cancer, is eminently safe for humans. Now, we believe at Intellectual Medicine, along with many other thought leaders, that cancer is really a chronic disease, that in many cases, it never really goes away completely, but it just goes into long-term remission. And when it starts to divide, you can't tell. By the time you get a 1 centimeter nodule anywhere in your body that's cancer, it is divided up to 30 times. Well, there are only 40 divisions in the lifespan of a cancer before it takes you out. So even at what we traditionally think of an early stage, cancer is fairly well developed. And that leaves us, I had a patient in the other day who said, is there a blood test I can do to screen for cancer or some type of imaging? Once again, we're looking for microscopic conditions with a tool that is way too insensitive to identify it. So we need to go after this in a way that's safe, that's affordable, that's sustainable, and that has a scientific basis. And that's where the vitamin C comes in. And
okay.
You do these high-dose infusions, and in our center will go up to 50,000 milligrams or more, testing for make sure that you achieve a kill level, that is a threshold in the blood that is generally identified as being toxic to cancer. And imagine that somebody's got, imagine they had breast cancer, and it's now 8 years since they had their malignancy, and deep inside their body, they are having a million cancer cells gathering together, getting ready to divide again. And all of a sudden, a tidal wave of vitamin C nails them and wipes their population down from a million to 100,000. You can do that. You can do that forever, as long as it doesn't hurt you, and it fits. So we're advocating for this approach, and we have developed a cancer registry at our center, so we can track these outcomes. So
how often should someone do that vitamin C infusion?
It depends on the primary malignancies. They have different doubling times. Some of them are more aggressive than others.
Okay.
So that's part of the individual assessment. In general, if you do it once a month, that's going to be pretty adequate for most cancers. I have a patient who's doing one every 3 months because of her history and the type of malignancy that she had. So the objective is to make it sustainable, Steve. You don't want something that you do intensely for 3 months, or, you know, there are these centers you can go to and you can fly there and you can check in and get a hotel room, and they'll do treatment 3 times a day for 2 weeks. What do you do for follow-up? You know, this is a lifetime condition. So at Intellectual Medicine, we want this close to home. We want it to be scientifically valid. That is a solid premise. We talk about standardized medicine. This is not standardized care, Steve. This is not FDA approved. This is intellectually based on what we know on the effect of cancer, on what we know about the natural history of some malignancies. You know, it drove me nuts when I would see these poor patients, and they would be so pleased to be over their cancer. And I'm thinking of now a patient, and she had gone 20 years cancer-free and woke up one day with bone pain, and 6 months later, her breast cancer had relapsed and had taken her out. And even back then, this is before I was in the current pathway of care I'm in now, I wondered, why? How can that happen? What's going on? And more importantly, you know, what can we do about it? And why are we not doing more? It's because this type of thought process is not being explored more fully. And there are reasons for that I'll get to. But, hey, how am I doing there, Nick? I got about a minute to go. Steve, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Doctor.
And thanks for your questions, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
You bet. So we got about a minute, right, Nick? So what are we going to do for music today? We got Shannon's not here. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah, pretty much. We have free reign now.
We got free reign. Yeah. So I can play all that, like, 1970 stuff that she hates.
Yeah.
But you know what? She might be listening. So, and I know it's breaking her heart not to be here. She loves being part of the show. And, you know, her studies are really preeminent. Shannon is a phenomenal nurse practitioner student and will be graduating in December. It'll be a very exciting time for us and for our patients. So we should do something more apropos. So we're looking at 1990s music, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was, you know, her era. She loves Dixie Chicks. You got anything there?
Let's see what we got.
But don't play the Evil 17. So I asked Nick, what can we do for music? And, you know, do we have to pay royalties? He said, no, we can pretty much do anything. But there are 17 songs that apparently we cannot play. I feel like George Carlin and the 12 words you can't say on TV. But we don't know what those are, do we? We have no idea. So anyhow,
I honestly don't know. Right. I just remember reading an email one time where there's a specific list somewhere that says the very few amount of songs that we can actually not play.
Somewhere out there.
Yep.
Well, folks, I'm Dr. Steve Pettirudi. This is Intellectual Medicine. You're listening to WPRO, the Voice of New England. And I'll be back after the break. We're talking about life extension, anti-aging. We're talking about the 120-year lifespan. And today, preventing, treating, and stopping cancer. Thanks for listening. I'll be back after the break.
2 days past 18, he was waiting for the bus in his army green set.
Hey, gang. Dr. Pettirudi, back from the break. This is Intellectual Medicine. You're listening to WPRO. That's for Shannon back home studying. If you're listening to the show, Shannon, turn it off and start studying. She's on her way to becoming an MP. And that's the Dixie Chicks. You know, I'm not sure who was for or against the war, but sure as heck know that they were against it. Cost them a lot of money. Anyhow, folks, I am back, and today we're talking about cancer and about intellectual medicine approaches to trying to treat it, suppress it, and make it not come back. And on the line right now is Monica Ross. Monica is a intellectual medicine aficionado and really has taught me a lot about family courage and open-minded thinking. Good morning, Monica. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm great. Thanks for being with me so bright and early. Do you normally get up this early, Monica?
Yes.
I thought so. Do you ever sleep? That's the question.
Anyway.
Hardworking. Monica, I know that we've been together for several years. I've been caring for your mom, and thanks for taking time to share the story with us and with the listening audience. And I will say that your mother was the very first patient that we ever started treating with intravenous vitamin C at our center.
Yes,
and when you came to us, you had already researched and decided on this path of care. So I'm interested in knowing if you could take me and the listeners back to the first days of your mother's diagnosis, what information you were given, and how you came to make the choices you did.
Okay, so about 10 years ago, she was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yep.
At the time, we were told she had a stage 4, but she was not active. So, you know, there was nothing we needed to do. It wasn't until 4 years ago that she started coming down with symptoms and things. You know, we started noticing tumors were getting bigger and they were visible. So then I started researching about natural ways, natural treatments, because you know, I heard so many scary things about chemo that we didn't want to go that route. And I started reading about vitamin C, and we had a real hard time finding anyone around here that did vitamin C infusion.
Right, but before you got to starting to read about vitamin C, what were your doctors telling you about the chemotherapy that they were recommending? Was the fear of the chemotherapy coming from the information you got from your doctor, or was it coming from your own concerns?
From my own concerns, the doctors gave us the only, you know, the only option they gave us was the chemo. They never said there was anything else that we could do.
Right.
And I didn't agree with that, and I was terrified of that, and so was my mother. So that made me go and, you know, look for different ways to try to help her.
Now, the chemo that they offered you, were they telling you that that would cure her cancer?
Well, he made it sound like that was the only option, that it will help her.
Right.
You know, he never said it will cure her, but, you know, they said it will help her.
Okay.
So, we were afraid because we've seen the stories and heard the stories, and it's not pretty.
Right. So you had concerns about chemotherapy. But you were not given any alternatives to treatment. And they said, in essence, what did they say? If you don't do chemotherapy, this cancer will progress and bad things will happen. I'm imagining that was part of it.
Yeah.
Now, it must have taken, so there you are with the doctors telling you that chemotherapy is the only option. And if you don't choose that option, bad things will happen. But you chose to do intravenous vitamin C. Did you get a lot of pressure from the doctors when you chose not to do chemo?
Well, not necessarily pressure, but in a way, the doctors laughed. You know, they're like, if you want to waste your money that way, you can go ahead and do so.
Right.
It's not going to do anything. It's not going to help.
Now, when your mom started to receive the intravenous vitamin C, did she notice any benefit? Could you tell that it was helping, or was it hard to judge?
We noticed the benefit right away. Just seeing the results of her lab, her feeling better. There's times with her grandchildren would come down with really bad colds, and she was not catching anything.
Yep.
Because she was very protected by it.
Yeah, that's outstanding. And is there anything bad that happens when she's getting vitamin C? Is it painful to her? Does she feel exhausted afterward? Is there any effect of that nature?
Not at all. There's not one side effect that she's had. The only thing, you can't really call it a side effect. Sometimes she gets thirsty.
Yes.
But that's the only issue that you can say that she has. Other than that, her skin looks great. you know, her immune system is very strong. So
now, I know we had some scares. There have been times where her white blood cell count has skyrocketed, and the feeling from the oncologist was, hey, this is the time. Now we go chemotherapy. But you still resisted, and we made changes in treatment, and she responded beautifully. Was it hard for you at that juncture to not go into a more conventional treatment?
You know, at points my mom was terrified, and she said, well, maybe we should go that way because, you know, you get the fear from the doctor saying this is the only thing that's going to help you.
Right.
And, you know, then we do research, we keep reading, and we take our chances, and we're glad we did because, fortunately for her, she's been doing really well with the way that we're going.
Yep. And well, Monica, this is a thank you for sharing your story. And your mom thrives today, and that white blood cell count at one point was pushing near 100,000, and now is back down to a normal range. And she's doing this all with your guidance and with a lot of intellectual input. It's truly an intellectual medicine's partnership. You need patients that have a philosophical focus like you and your family. And by the way, your oncologist is a wonderful doctor and has been I'm really happy to work with. And I want to emphasize this to our listening audience. This is not a conflict of interest. This is not an either-or dynamic. We've had wonderful conversations talking about the choices that you're making. And I'm really pleased with that relationship. I think he's a wonderful doc. What do you think, Monica?
Yes, I agree.
Thank you. And it's Dr. Go ahead and say his name because he deserves a shout-out here.
His name is Dr. Choquette.
Yep, and I'd like to thank Dr. Choquette, Monica, because of his open-mindedness. He's given us freedom to make a choice without guilt and given you information that you could process, and he respects your intelligence, as do I. Well, thanks a ton for calling in, Monica. I look forward to talking to you again. I'm Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine. We'll see you after the break, and we're about to hear from Doug Lazette from Seascape News Center. Take it away, Doug.
News Talk 630 and 99.7 FM WPRO presents Intellectual Medicine with Dr. Pederuti. Join Dr. Pederuti as he guides people towards living the 120 lifespan while retaining youth. He'll apply logic, reason, and scientific evidence to address conditions that drain people of their joy and vitality while protecting people from the harmful aspects of conventional medicine. Now, here's Dr. Steve Pederuti.
Hey, everybody. I am back. It's Dr. Steve Pederuti here at WPRO. Shannon is home studying. We're talking about living the 120-year lifespan, and to do that, you cannot die young from cancer. And if you are fighting cancer, we're talking about different approaches, intravenous vitamin C among them. We just heard from Monica, who shared the story of her mother. I'd like to draw out a couple of details from her history because they play into this. And by the way, we do have some time available today, Nick, if they want to take a call. What's that, the number if folks want to talk to me?
Our phone number is 401-321 WPRO, so 9776.
Great. I like when they use the numbers. I always have so much trouble figuring out the letter thing. But so a couple of details to bring out. You heard Monica talk about her mother who has non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, first diagnosed 10 years ago, and at that time was told that it is in a state that doesn't require treatment, and we're going to do, sometimes we call this in medicine, watchful waiting, which means we're going to do nothing and hope it doesn't get worse, but we know it will, and when it does, we'll give you chemo or something like it. That's one aspect. You need to have something that can be rendered at the time of the diagnosis that is safe and non-harmful. Now, you heard Monica talk about the fact that her mother felt better right away. When doing intravenous vitamin C, there's no adverse consequence. You're not feeling bad. You also noted that the relationship with the oncologist was a positive one. This is not an either-or dichotomy. Those of us that advocate for intellectual medicine and for advancing scientifically credible means of helping people with cancer are not anti-conventional therapy. The converse cannot be said to be true. That is, we have seen some oncologists that have said to their patients, you know, if you do that type of care, I will not be your doctor. To me, that is dogmatic, judgmental, and lacking of respect to the patient. And if that's the circumstance you ever face, it's a good reason to find a more open-minded physician. It comes down to being given good information and being given a chance to make your best choices. And those choices should be well-informed. And in Monica's case with her mother, they chose not to do any chemotherapeutic pathway. Lymphomas are sometimes smoldering and often don't require chemotherapy. It does not mean, however, that they cannot be helped with high-dose intravenous vitamin C to suppress the malignancy and help make it less likely to progress. Other conditions like that, you think of pancreatic cancer, prostate cancer, when it is really indolent. So we have standardized care for many things. We don't have it for things that are less well-defined in their outcome. So I had a woman who came to see me. She had pancreatic cancer, which is a known horrible cancer with a bad prognosis. And she was given the option of having standardized care, and she was given the option of doing something, let's say, a little bit out of the norm. And she said, "What should I do, doctor?" And she said, I said, "Well, standardized care, we know where that ends. It's not wrong to do it, but the likelihood of you being alive in 5 years is quite small. And if standardized care does not offer you a benefit of a cure, it's intellectually rational to do something not quite so standardized." She made the non-standardized choice, and here she was 7 years later, still alive to tell about it. Now, this was some time ago. She subsequently developed a second cancer, a lung cancer, that was also treated and she recovered from. But that highlights another detail that I'm trying to share with you. Once you've had cancer, you are forevermore at risk by virtue of the conditions that first led to you catching cancer, and in some cases as a consequence of the treatment that was rendered in its place. There's another patient that I had who came to us. Her family brought her, lovely woman. And when we saw her, she was in a walker on oxygen. She was in hospice care for stage 4 terminal lung cancer. And she also had end-stage heart failure. And the request of the family was simply, what can be done? What can be done to make mom feel better, to improve her life? And we talked about the prognosis and how aggressive this type of cancer was. And we chose a path. Now, this woman at the time was in her 70s, of high-dose intravenous vitamin C. We combined that with bioidentical hormone therapy. That's right. We gave this elderly woman bioidentical hormone therapy for its energizing and strength-enhancing attributes. 1 year later, she walked in the office without her walker, without her oxygen. Her cancer, her wish and her ambition was to not let the cancer take her life. And it didn't. She died peacefully years later of her heart condition, but the cancer never got her. The reason that she was in the hospice in the first place. By the way, she canceled her hospice care. Now, these type of outcomes are not uncommon in the world of intellectual medicine. I have colleagues throughout the country that are having these type of outcomes for individuals. In some cases, we can afford support for people that have had cancer in the past to make it less likely to come back. That's our intellectual goal. In other cases, it's quality of life. Studies have shown that for folks with advanced cancer, when the chemotherapy is proven no longer to be effective, they sometimes will give what's called palliative chemotherapy, which is low-dose chemotherapy. It's very hard to look at a person and say to them, "I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do, it's time to die." That's a hard conversation. Palliative chemo is low-dose, and they have found that it causes harm, that it makes people feel worse and die faster. In the interest of doing something, sometimes harm is done. Conversely, when people with end-stage cancer receive high-dose intravenous vitamin C, the studies have shown improved energy, improved quality of life, improved life. Whether or not it extends life, in some cases, the studies have certainly shown that, even in the most terminal phases. Do I have time, Nick? How am I doing? I'm cutting it short. All right, when I come back, we'll continue this conversation. I have more I want to share with you. This is Dr. Pedderer. You're listening to Intellectual Medicine on WPRO. And I'm back. That's a little Josh Groban. Dr. Pedderer here. It's Intellectual Medicine, where we harbor no biases. Intellectual medicine, by definition, requires application of thought, reason, science, and information. And our own reasoning capacities are central in this process. You heard today from Monica, who applied intellectual processes to assess treating her mother's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. She arrived at the decision to take intravenous vitamin C and forego chemotherapy. That was 10 years ago when she was first diagnosed, 4 years ago when she started her vitamin C, and she continues to thrive, enjoying a high quality of life with an improvement in her markers of cancer and a shrinkage of her tumors. We also heard stories of patients that have benefited, but intellectual medicine harbors no bias. That means if there's a chemotherapeutic regimen out there that will help you, you'd be a fool not to take it when you are facing severe disease like cancer. And in Rhode Island, we're very fortunate. We have some of the most outstanding cancer treatment centers, really, in the world. You don't have to go very far. But here's my beef. The same open-minded intellectual embracing of things that may help is not shared by the vast majority of conventional medical doctors. They look at what you are thinking, what we are doing. They look at intellectual medicine as some kind of an existential threat. Look, there's nothing that people like more than power, and people in power don't like to lose power, and that includes people in the position of intellectual power. The authoritative nature of medicine is such that some doctors do not like having their judgment questioned, their wisdom challenged. They don't like it when you come to them with your petty little thoughts of your own, and they dismiss them, either through body language or verbally. Now, if you have the kind of doctor that if you go to them and say, gee, doctor, what do you think about what I read regarding mushroom therapy for treating cancer? And the doctor says that's nonsense without pausing to think. There's somebody that is hardcore into their biases and is going to be limited in the capacity to serve. So tied into this is a study that a headline I read in one of the medical journals. It said 52% of you people are still using supplements despite little evidence of their help. Now, note the bias in the language. Still using your supplements. You morons, would you stop taking all those supplements is what they really want to tell you. Take our drugs. They're the only things that have been shown to help. And really, there's no scientific evidence of its value. They're just not reading the research that's out there. Vitamin D at high levels clearly shown to benefit individuals, correlating with diminished malignancy risks. We know that glucosamine and chondroitin has been validated to be better than Celebrex for treating arthritis. It's better because there are no side effects and the outcomes were just as good. We know that melatonin in a study has been shown to be as good as drug therapy for treating migraine headaches. We know this information because it's out there in credible sources. If you choose to not educate yourself as a clinician, then your reaction when you bump into facts you haven't heard about is to reject them. That's the wave we're fighting against in intellectual medicine. Now, here it was the sinister line that was buried in this headline. They said the reason that people are still using supplements are because consumers are unaware. That's code speak for your morons. You just don't know enough. And the other thing they said is that there's a lack of sufficient restrictions on labeling. There's a scary word, restrictions. You know, if we can't get people to behave the way we want them to, the way we think they should, then by golly, we're going to restrict their behavior through legislation, through labeling, and through regulatory imposition. We're talking about maintaining your freedom, one of the most important freedoms of which is the freedom to choose how you want to live, what goes in your body, what you choose to do for treating the conditions you have, how you want to move through your life. And any state agency that would impose a demand on us to take a drug we don't want to take, right now I'm talking about that HPV immunization that we are against being forced on us. We're not against immunizations. We're against it being forcibly injected into our bodies. If we lay down on these issues, we will lose our freedoms. Now, fortunately, you can still get IV vitamin C if you choose to. That freedom is still out there. But it is tenuous. It's tenuous because there are people that want to see it end. So we're going to continue the fight. I'll be back after this break. We'll be talking more about living 120 years. I am Dr. Steve Pedrutti, and this is Intellectual Medicine at WPRO. Please allow me to introduce myself. I am back. It's Dr. Pedrutti. This is Intellectual Medicine. Beautiful morning here with Nick. Shannon's home studying. Today we've been talking about cancer, high-dose intravenous vitamin C. At the Center in Intellectual Medicine, There's more than a high-dose intravenous vitamin C. We believe in focusing and directing supplement use in a manner that is going to be most supportive of suppressing cancer. Listen, if you've ever had cancer and your therapy is completed and you're breathing that big sigh of relief, it's time to think about the next step. At Intellectual Medicine, we've introduced our cancer-fighting secondary prevention regimen for anybody who's ever had cancer to try to make it less likely for it to come back. We also, in the 120-year lifespan pursuit, are looking at ways to prevent it from ever happening. You want to be 120, you've got to dodge the big three. You don't want to die prematurely from heart disease, you do not want to catch dementia, and you do not want to catch cancer. And there are things that we know that will pivot your risks, making it less likely to occur. Well, folks, every week we explore these topics. Our time together is coming to a close. Another hour has gone by. It's hard to believe it. We'll pick up our chat again when we get together a week from today. We're going to be talking next week about advanced thyroid therapy. We're going to be talking about the ways in which that interacts with weight and obesity. It turns out that correcting thyroid in a conventional manner through standardized care is fully inadequate to control weight. If you have low thyroid and you've been corrected with thyroid medicine, odds are the weight issue never got better. And there's a reason for that. We're going to be exploring that next week, along with expanding upon the advances we've made and the discoveries we've made regarding treating and curing obesity. Today we are talking about cancer, and obesity certainly is at the cornerstone of that concern. Obesity increases cancer risk. Hey, we're coming to our close. I could go on. This is so much fun. But Tony DeJesus is waiting. The Big Blue Bug Solution is next. Stay tuned to the most intellectual station in Southern New England, WPRO. I am Dr. Pederuti. This is Intellectual Medicine. I'll see you next week.